Chapter 25. With the fall of Ulfgar, the cult's will to resist broke. Though a few of the more rabid continued to fight, most threw down their weapons in surrender. Grimly, Geryon's army rounded them up and herded them through the snowy, blood-stained streets into the town's central square. Silk and Javelin briefly questioned a sullen captive with a bloody bandage wrapped around his head, then joined Geryon and Durnik, who stood watch over their still unconscious prisoner. "Is that him?" Silk asked curiously, absently polishing one of his rings on the front of his gray doublet. Geryon nodded. "He doesn't look all that impressive, does he?" "The large stone house over there is his," Javelin said, pointing at a square building with red tiles on its roof.
"Not anymore," Geryon replied. "It's mine now."
Javelin smiled briefly.
"We will want to search it rather thoroughly. People sometimes forget to destroy important things."
"We might as well take Ulfgar in there, too," Geryon said. "We need to question him, and that house is as good as any."
"I'll go get the others, then,"
Durnik offered, pulling off his pot-shaped helmet.
"You think it's safe enough to bring Paul and the other ladies into the city yet?"
"It should be," Javelin replied. "What little resistance there is left is in the southeast quarter of the city."
Durnik nodded and went on across the square, his mail shirt jingling. Geryon, Silk, and Javelin picked up the limp form of the black-bearded man and carried him toward the stately house with the banner of a bear flying from a staff in front of it. As they started up the stairs, Geryon glanced at a Riven soldier standing guard over some demoralized prisoners huddled miserably in the slush.
"Would you do me a favor?" he asked the gray-cloaked man.
"Of course, Your Majesty,"
the soldier said, saluting.
"Chop that thing down."
Geryon indicated the flagstaff with a thrust of his jaw.
"At once, Your Majesty,"
the soldier grinned.
"I should have thought of that myself."
They carried Ulfgar into the house and through a polished door. The room beyond the door was luxuriously furnished, but the chairs were mostly overturned, and there were sheets of parchment everywhere. A crumpled heap of them had been stuffed into a large stone fireplace built into the back wall, but the fireplace was cold.
"Good," Javelin muttered. "He was interrupted before he could burn anything."
Silk looked around the room. Rich, dark-colored tapestries hung on the walls. The green carpeting was thick and soft. The chairs were all upholstered in scarlet velvet, and unlighted candles stood in silver sconces along the wall.
"He managed to live fairly well, didn't he?"
the little man murmured, as they unceremoniously dumped the prisoner in the rust-colored doublet in one corner.
"Let's gather up these documents. I want to go over them," Javelin said.
Geryon unstrapped his sword, dropped his helmet on the floor, and shrugged himself out of his heavy mail shirt. He sank wearily onto a soft couch.
"I am absolutely exhausted. I feel as if I haven't slept for a week."
Silk shrugged.
"One of the privileges of command."
The door opened and Belgarath came into the room.
"Durnik said I could find you here," he said, pushing back the hood of his shabby old cloak.
He crossed the room and nudged the limp form in the corner.
"He isn't dead, is he?"
"No,"
Geryon replied.
"Durnik put him to sleep with a club, is all."
"Why the blindfold?"
the old man asked, indicating the strip of blue cloth tied across the captive's face.
"He was using sorcery before we captured him. I thought it might not be a bad idea to cover his eyes."
"Well, that depends upon how good he is. Durnik sent soldiers out to round up the others. Then he went over to the encampment to get Paul and the other ladies."
"Can you wake him up?"
Silk asked.
"Let's have Paul do it. Her touch is a little lighter than mine. I don't want to break anything accidentally."
It was perhaps 3/4 of an hour later when they all finally gathered in the green-carpeted room. Belgarath looked around,
then straddled a straight-backed chair in front of the captive.
"All right, Paul," he said bleakly. "Wake him up."
Polgara unfastened her blue cloak, knelt beside the prisoner, and put one hand on each side of his head. Geryon heard a whispered rushing sound and felt a gentle surge.
Ulfgar groaned.
"Give him a few minutes," she said, rising to her feet. "Then you can start questioning him." "He's probably going to be stubborn about it,"
Bryn predicted with a broad grin.
"I'll be terribly disappointed in him if he isn't," Silk said, as he rifled through a drawer in a large, polished cabinet.
"Of you barbarians... blinded me,"
Ulfgar said in a weak voice as he struggled into a sitting position.
"No,"
Polgara told him.
"Your eyes are covered to keep you out of mischief."
"Are my captors women, then?"
There was contempt in the black-bearded man's voice.
"This one of them is,"
Tenedra said, pushing her dark green cloak slightly to one side. It was the note in her voice that warned Geryon and saved the prisoner's life. With blazing eyes, she snatched one of the daggers from Vela's belt and flew at the blindfolded man with a gleaming blade held aloft. At the last instant, Geryon caught her upraised arm and wrested the knife from her grasp.
"Give me that!"
"No, Synedra."
"He stole my baby! I will kill him!"
"No, you won't. We cannot get any answers out of him if you cut his throat." With one arm still about her, he handed the dagger back to Vela.
"We have a few questions for you, Ulfgar,"
Belgarath said to the captive.
"You're going to have to wait a long time for the answers."
"I am so glad that he said that," Hetar murmured. "Who wants to start cutting on him?"
"Do whatever you wish,"
Ulfgar sneered at them. "My body is of no concern to me."
"We'll do everything we can to change your mind about that,"
Vela said, in a chillingly sweet voice as she tested the edge of a dagger with her thumb.
"Just what is it you wanted to know, Belgarath?"
Erend asked, turning from his curious examination of a bronze statue standing in the corner.
"I can give you the answers if you want."
Belgarath looked at the blonde boy sharply.
"Do you know what is in his mind?"
he asked, startled.
"More or less, yes."
"Where's my son?" Geryon asked quickly.
"That's one thing he doesn't know,"
Erend replied.
"He had nothing to do with the abduction."
"Well, who did it then?"
"He's not sure, but he thinks it was Zandramos."
"Zandramos?"
"That name keeps cropping up, doesn't it?" Silk said.
"Does he know who Zandramos is?"
"Not really. It's just a name that he's heard from his master."
"Who is his master?"
"He's afraid to even think the name,"
Erend said.
"It's a man with a splotchy face, though."
The prisoner was struggling desperately now, trying to free himself from the ropes which bound him.
"Lies!" he screamed at them. "All lies!"
"This man was sent here by his master to make sure that Belgarion and Tenedra didn't have any children,"
Erend continued, ignoring the now screaming captive.
"Or to see to it that if you did, the children didn't live. He couldn't have been behind the abduction, Belgarion. If he had been the one who crept into the nursery at Riva, he would have killed your son, not taken him away." "Where does he come from?"
Lizelle asked curiously as she removed her scarlet cloak.
"I cannot quite place his accent." "That's probably because he's not really a man,"
Erend told her.
"At least, not entirely. He remembers being an animal of some sort."
They all stared at the boy, and then at Ulfgar. At that point, the door opened again, and the hunchbacked Beldon came into the room. He was about to say something, but stopped, staring at the bound and blindfolded prisoner. He stumped across the floor, bent and ripped the blue cloth away from the man's eyes to stare into his face.
"Well, dog, what brings you out of your kennel?"
"You?"
Ulfgar gasped, his face growing suddenly pale.
Irvan will have your heart for breakfast when he finds out how badly you've botched things,
Belden said pleasantly. Do you know this man? Geryon asked sharply.
He and I have known each other for a long, long time, haven't we, Herrigan?
The prisoner spat at him.
I see you'll need a little bit of housebreaking,
Belden grinned.
Who is he? Geryon demanded. His name is Herrigan. He's a Malorian Grolem, one of Irvan's dogs. The last time I saw him, he was whining and fawning all over Irvan's feet.
Then, quite suddenly, the captive vanished. Belden unleashed a string of foul curses, then he, too, flickered out of sight.
What happened?
Zinedra gasped.
Where did they go?
Maybe Belden is not as smart as I thought, Belgarath said. He should have left that blindfold alone. Our prisoner translocated himself outside this building.
Can you do that? Geryon asked incredulously. Without being able to see what you're doing, I mean?
It is very, very dangerous. But Herrigan seems to have been desperate. Belden is following him.
He'll catch him, won't he?
It's hard to say.
I still have questions that have to be answered.
I can answer them for you, Belgarion,
Erend told him quite calmly.
You mean to say that you still know what is in his mind, even though he is not here anymore?
Erend nodded.
Why don't you just start at the beginning, Erend?
Bulgara suggested.
All right. This Herrigan, I guess his real name is, came here because his master, the one Belden called Irvan, sent him here to make sure that Belgarion and Zinedra never had any children. Herrigan came here and gained control of the bear cult. At first he stirred up all kinds of talk against Zinedra, hoping that he could force Belgarion to set her aside and marry someone else. Then, when he heard that she was going to have a baby, he sent someone to try to kill her. That didn't work, of course, and he started to get desperate. He was terribly afraid of what Irvan would do to him if he failed. He tried to gain control of Zinedra, when she was asleep once, to make her smother the baby, but someone, he doesn't know who, stepped in and stopped him.
It was Poledra, Geryon murmured.
I was there that night.
Is that when he came up with the idea of murdering Brand and laying the blame at King Anhig's door? General Brendig asked.
Erend frowned slightly.
Killing Brand was an accident. As closely as Herrigan could work it out, Brand just happened along and caught the cultists in the hallway when they were about to do what he really sent them to Riva to do.
And what was that?
Zinedra asked.
They were on their way to the royal apartments to kill you and your baby.
Her face paled.
And then they were supposed to kill themselves. That was what was supposed to start the war between Belgarion and King Anhag. Anyway, something went wrong. Brand got killed instead of you and your baby, and we found out that the cult was responsible instead of Anhag. He didn't dare go back to Irvan and admit that he had failed. Then Zandramas took your baby and got away from the Isle of the Winds with him. Herrigan could not follow him because Belgarion was already marching on Rayon by the time he found out about it. He was trapped here, and Zandramas was getting away with your baby.
That Nyssen's ship, Kael exclaimed. Zandramas stole your son, Belgarion, and then slipped off to the south and left us all floundering around here in Drasnia.
What about the story we got from that Kerrig cultist right after the abduction? Bren asked.
A bear cultist isn't usually very bright, Kael replied. I don't think this Zandramas would have had too much difficulty in persuading those Kerrigs that the abduction was on Herrigan's orders. And all that gibberish about the prince being raised in the cult so that one day he could claim the Riven throne is just a kind of brain-sick nonsense men like that would believe.
That's why they were left behind then, Geryon said.
We were supposed to capture at least one of them and get the carefully prepared story that sent us off here to Rhaon while Zandramas sailed away to the south with my son.
It looks as if we have all been very carefully manipulated, Javelin said,
sorting through some parchment sheets he had stacked on a polished table.
Herrigan, as well as the rest of us.
We can be clever, too, Belgrath said. I don't think Zandramos realizes that the orb will follow Geren's trail. If we move fast enough, we can sneak up from behind and take this clever manipulator by surprise.
It won't work across the water,
the dry voice in Geryon's mind said laconically.
What?
The orb cannot follow your son's trail over the water. The ground stays in one place. Water keeps moving around. Wind, tides, that sort of thing.
Are you sure?
But the voice was gone.
There's a problem, Grandfather,
Geryon said.
The orb cannot find a trail on water.
How do you know that?
Geryon tapped his forehead.
He just told me.
Well, that complicates things a bit.
Not too much, Silk disagreed.
There are very few places where a Nyssen ship can land without being searched from keel to topmast. Most monarchs don't care much for the idea of having drugs and poisons slipped into their kingdoms. Zandramos would definitely not want to sail into some port and get caught with the heir to the Riven throne aboard ship.
There are many hidden coves along the coast of Arendia,
Lulderan suggested. Silk shook his head.
Oh, I don't think so. I think the ship would have just stayed out to sea. I am sure that Zandramos wanted to get as far away from the Elven kingdoms as possible, and as quickly as possible.
If this ruse that sent us here to Rayon had not worked, Geryon would have had every man and every ship in the West out looking for his son.
How about southern Tormurgos, General Brendig suggested.
Javelin frowned.
No. There's a war going on down there, and the whole west coast is being patrolled by Murgos ships. The only safe place for a Nyssen ship to land is in Nyssa itself.
And that brings us back to Salmisra, doesn't it?
Polgara said.
I think that if there had been any kind of official involvement in this, my people would have found out about it, Lady Polgara. I have got Salmisra's palace thoroughly covered. The actual orders would have had to come from Tzadi, Salmisra's chief eunuch, and we watch him all the time. I don't think this came out of the palace.
The door opened, and Belden, his face as dark as a thundercloud, entered.
By the gods, he swore. I lost him.
Lost him? Belgarath asked. How?
When he got to the street, he turned himself into a hawk. I was right on his tail, but he went into the clouds and changed form on me again. When he came out, he was mixed up in the middle of a flock of geese flying south. Naturally, when the geese saw me, they flew off squawking in all directions. I couldn't tell which one of them he was.
You must be getting old.
Why don't you shut up, Belgarath?
He's not important anymore, anyway, Belgarath shrugged. We got what we needed out of him.
I think I'd prefer it if he were safely dead. If nothing else, the loss of one of his favorite dogs would irritate Irvan, and I'll go out of my way to do that any day in the week.
Why do you keep calling him a dog? Hetar asked curiously.
Because he's one of the Khandim, and that's what they are, the Hounds of Torak.
Would you like to explain that?
Queen Porin asked. Belden took a deep breath to get his irritation under control.
Oh, it's not too complicated. When they built Tol Mishrak in Meloria, Torak set certain Grolems the task of guarding the city. In order to do that, they became hounds.
Geryon shuddered. The memory of the huge dog shapes they had encountered in the City of Night coming back to him with a painful clarity.
Anyway, after the Battle of Vomimbre, when Torak was put to sleep for all of those centuries, Irvan went into the forbidden area around the ruins and managed to persuade a pack of the hounds that he was acting on behalf of old Burntface. He took them back to Malyaska with him and gradually changed them back into Grolems, even though he had to kill about half of them in the process. Anyhow, they call themselves the Khandim, a sort of secret order within the Grolem Church. They are absolutely loyal to Irvan. Oh, they're pretty fair sorcerers, and they dabble a bit in magic as well. Underneath it all, though, they're still dogs. Very obedient, much more dangerous in packs than they are as individuals.
What a fascinating little sidelight, Silk observed, looking up from a parchment scroll he had found in one of the cabinets.
You have a very clever mouth, Keldar, Beldon said testily. How would you like to have me brick it up for you?
Oh, no, that's quite all right, Beldon.
Well, what now, Belgarath?
Queen Boren wanted to know.
Now? Now we go after Zandramos, of course. This hoax with the cult has put us a long way behind, but we will catch up.
You can count on that, Geryon said. I dealt with the Child of Dark once before, and I can do it again if I have to. He turned back to Erend. Do you have any idea of why Irvan wants my son killed?
It's something he found in a book of some kind. The book says that if your son ever falls into the hands of Zandramas, then Zandramas will be able to use him to do something, whatever it is. Irvan would be willing to destroy the world to prevent it.
What is it that Zandramas would be able to do? Belgarath asked, his eyes now intent.
Herrikin doesn't know. All he knows is that he has failed in the task Irvan set him.
Belgarath smiled slowly, a cold and wintry kind of smile.
I don't think we need to waste any time chasing down Herrikin.
Not chase him?
Zinedra exclaimed.
After all he has done to us?
Irvan will take care of him for us, and Irvan will do things to him that we could not even begin to think of. Who is this, Irvan? General Brendig asked. Torek's third disciple, Belgarath replied. There used to be three of them, Tochik, Zadar, and Irvan. He is the only one left.
We still don't know anything about Zandramas, Silk said.
We know a few things. We know that Zandramas is now the Child of Dark, for example.
That doesn't fit together, Belgarath, Beric rumbled. Why would Irvan want to interfere with the Child of Dark? They're on the same side, aren't they?
Apparently not. It begins to look as if there's a little dissension in the ranks on the other side.
Well, that's always helpful.
Yes, I'd like to know a bit more before I start gloating, though.
It was mid-afternoon before the last fanatic resistance collapsed in the southeast quarter of Rayon, and the demoralized prisoners were herded through the streets of the burning town, joining the others in the town square. Geryon and General Brendig stood on the second-floor balcony of the house where they had taken Herrikin, talking quietly with the small black-gowned queen of Drasnia.
"What will you do with them now, Your Majesty?"
General Brendig asked her, looking down at the frightened prisoners in the square.
"I'm going to tell them the truth and let them go, Brendig."
"Let them go?"
"Of course."
"I'm afraid I don't quite follow you."
They're going to be just a little upset when I tell them that they have been duped into betraying Aloria by a Malorian Grolem.
I don't think they'll believe you.
Enough of them will,
she replied placidly, adjusting the collar of her black dress.
I will manage to convince at least some of them of the truth, and they'll spread the word. Once it becomes general knowledge that the cult fell under the domination of the Grolem Herrikin, it is going to be more difficult for them to gain new converts, don't you think?
Brendig considered that.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, he admitted. But will you punish the ones who won't listen?
That would be tyranny, General. And one should always try to avoid the appearance of tyranny, particularly when it is unnecessary. Once word of this gets around, I think that anyone who starts babbling about the divine mission of Aloria to subjugate the southern kingdoms is going to be greeted with a barrage of stones.
All right, then. What are you going to do about General Haldar? You're not just going to let him go, too, are you?
Haldar is quite another matter. He is a traitor, and that sort of thing ought to be discouraged.
When he finds out what happened here, he'll probably try to run.
Appearances can be deceiving, General Brendig, she told him with a chill smile. I may look like a helpless woman, but I have a very long arm. Haldor cannot run far enough or fast enough to escape me, and when my people catch him, he will be brought back to Boktor in chains to stand trial. I think the outcome of that trial will be fairly predictable.
Would you excuse me? Geryon asked politely. I need to go talk with my grandfather.
Of course, Geryon,
Queen Porin said with a warm little smile. He went back downstairs and found Silk and Javelin still ransacking the chests and cabinets in the green carpeted room.
Are you finding anything useful?
Well, quite a bit, actually, Javelin replied. I expect, by the time we are finished, we will have the name of every cult member in Eloria.
It just proves something I've always said, Silk noted as he continued to read.
A man should never put anything down in writing.
Have either of you any idea where I can find Belgarath?
You might try the kitchens at the back of the house, Silk replied. He said something about being hungry. I think Belden went with him.
The kitchen in the Harrican house had escaped the general ransacking by Yarblek's men, who appeared to be more interested in loot than in food, and the two old sorcerers sat at a comfortable table near a low arched window, picking at the remains of a roasted chicken.
"Oh, Geryon, my boy," Belgarath said expansively. "Come in and join us."
"Do you suppose there's anything to drink around here?" Belden asked, wiping his fingers on the front of his tunic.
"There should be," Belgarath replied. "'Tis a kitchen, after all. Why don't you look in that pantry there?"
Belden rose and crossed the kitchen floor toward the pantry. Geryon bent slightly to look out the low window at the houses burning one street over.
"It's starting to snow again," he observed.
Belgarath grunted.
"I think we'll want to get out of here as quickly as we can. I don't really want to spend the winter here."
"Aha!"
Belden said from the pantry. He emerged with a triumphant grin, carrying a small wooden cask.
"You had better taste it first," Belgarath told him. "It might be vinegar."
Belden set the cask on the floor and bashed in its top with his fist. Then he licked his fingers and smacked his lips.
"Nope, definitely not vinegar."
He rummaged through a nearby cupboard and produced three earthenware cups.
"Well, brother," Belgarath said, "what are your plans?"
Belden dipped into the cask with one of the cups.
"I think I'll see if I can track down Harrican. I'd like to finish him off before I go back to Meloria. He's not the kind you want lurking in alleys behind you as you go by."
"You are going to Meloria, then?"
Belgarath tore a wing off the chicken lying on the table.
"That's possibly the only place where we can get any solid information about this Xandramos," Belden belched.
"Javelin says that he thinks it's a Darshevan name."
Belden grunted at Geryon.
That could help a little. This time I'll start there. I couldn't get anything at all at Malzeth, and those half-wits in Coranda fell over in a dead faint every time I mentioned the name.
"Did you try Malyaska?" Belgarath asked him.
"Hardly. Arvon's got my description posted on every wall in that place. For some reason he's afraid that someday I just might show up and yank out several yards of his guts."
"Oh, really? I wonder why."
"I told him so. That's why."
"You will be in Darshiva, then?"
"For the time being. At least I will after I've got Harrican safely underground. If I find out anything about Xandramos, I'll get word to you."
"Keep your eyes open for clear copies of the Malorian Gospels, and the Ashabine Oracles, too. According to the Codex, I am supposed to find clues in them."
"And what are you going to do?"
"I think I'll go down to Nyssa and see if the orb can pick up the trail of my great-grandson."
"The fact that some Riven shepherd saw a Nyssan ship is a pretty slender lead, Belgarath."
"I know. But at the moment, it is the only one we've got."
Geryon absently pulled a few fragments off of the picked-over chicken and put them in his mouth. He suddenly realized that he was ravenously hungry.
"Are you going to take Polgara with you?"
"I don't think so. Geryon and I are likely to be out of touch, and we will need somebody here in the north to keep an eye on things. The Alorns are feeling muscular at the moment, and they're going to need a firm hand to keep them out of mischief."
"That's a normal condition for Alorns. You realize that Polgara is not going to be happy when you tell her she has to stay behind, don't you?"
"I know," Belgarath replied with a gloomy look. "Maybe I will just leave her a note. That worked out pretty well last time."
"Just try to make sure she's not in the vicinity of anything breakable when she gets the note," Dalden laughed then. "Like large cities, mountain ranges. I heard what happened when she got the last note you left."
The door opened and Barak stuck his head into the kitchen.
"Oh, there you are. There are a couple of people out here who want to see you. Mandor Allen found them on the outskirts of town. A very strange pair."
"How do you mean strange?"
"Well, the man is as big as a house. He's got arms like tree trunks, but he can't talk. The girl's pretty enough, but she's blind."
Belgarath and Belden exchanged a quick look.
"How do you know she's blind?" "She's got a cloth tied across her eyes. I just assumed that was what it meant."
"I guess we had better go talk to her," Belden said, rising from his seat. "A seeress wouldn't be in this part of the world unless it was pretty important."
"A seeress?"
"One of those people from Kel," Belgarath explained. "They are always blindfolded, and their guides are always mutes. Let's go see what she has to say."
When they entered the large main room, they found the others curiously eyeing the two strangers. The blindfolded seeress was a slight girl in a white robe. She had dark blonde hair, and a serene smile touched her lips. She stood quietly in the center of the room, patiently waiting. Beside her stood one of the largest men Geryon had ever seen. He wore a kind of sleeveless kirtle of coarse undyed cloth, belted at the waist, and he carried no weapon except for a stout, polished staff. He towered above even Hetar, and his bare arms were awesomely muscled. In a curious way, he seemed almost to hover over his slender mistress, his eyes watchful and protective.
"Has she said who she is?"
Belgarath quietly asked Polgara as they joined the others.
"No,"
Polgara replied.
"All that she says is that she has to speak with you and Geryon." "Her name is Tsaradis,"
Aaron said from nearby.
"Do you know her?"
Geryon asked.
"We met once in the Vale. She wanted to find out something about me, so she came there and we talked."
"What did she want to find out?"
"She didn't say."
"Didn't you ask her?"
"I think that if she'd wanted me to know, she would have told me." "I would speak with thee, ancient Belgarath,"
the seeress said in her light, clear voice.
"And with thee also, Belgarion."
They drew closer.
"I am permitted a short time here to tell thee certain truths. First, know that your tasks are not yet completed. Necessity doth command yet one more meeting between the Child of Light and the Child of Dark. And mark me well, this meeting shall be the last, for it is during this meeting that the final choice between light and dark shall be made."
"And where will this meeting take place, Tsaradis?"
Belgarath asked her, his face intent.
"In the presence of the Sardian, in the place which is no more."
"And where is that?"
"The path to that dread place lies in the mysteries, ancient one. Thou must seek it there."
She turned her face toward Geryon, half reaching out to him with one slender hand.
"Thy heart is sore, Belgarion,"
she said with a great sympathy in her voice.
"For Xandoramas, the Child of Dark, hath reft away thy son, and even now doth flee with him toward the Sardian. It lies upon thee to bar the path of Zandramas to that stone. For the stars and the voices of the earth proclaim that the power of the dark doth reside in the Sardian, even as the power of the light doth reside in the orb of Aldur. Should Zandramas reach the dark stone with the babe, the dark shall triumph, and its triumph shall be eternal. Is my baby all right?
Synedra demanded, her face pale and a dreadful fear in her eyes.
Thy child is safe and well, Synedra,
Tiradus told her.
Zandramas will protect him from all harm, not out of love, but out of necessity.
The seeress's face grew still.
Thou must steel thy heart, however, for should there be no other way to prevent Zandramas from reaching the Sardian with thine infant son, it falls to thee, or to thy husband, to slay the child.
Slay?
Synedra exclaimed.
Never!
Then the dark shall prevail,
Tiradus said simply. She turned back to Geryon.
My time grows short. Heed what I say. Thy choice of companions to aid thee in this task of thine must be guided by necessity, and not thine own preference. Shouldst thou choose Orai, then shalt thou fail thy task, and Zandramas will defeat thee. Thy son shall be lost to thee forever, and the world as thou knowest it shall be no more.
Geryon's face was bleak.
Go ahead, he told her shortly. Say the rest of what you have to say.
Her suggestion that either he or Synedra could ever find any circumstances to kill their own child had filled him with a sudden anger.
Thou wilt leave this place in the company of ancient Belgarath and his most revered daughter. Thou must also take with thee the bearer of the orb and thy wife.
Absurd, he burst out. I'm not going to expose Synedra or Erend to that kind of danger.
Then thou wilt surely fail.
He looked at her helplessly.
Thou must have with thee as well the guide and the man with two lives, and one other whom I will reveal to thee. Thou wilt be joined at some time later by others, the huntress, the man who is no man, the empty one, and by the woman who watches.
Belden muttered sourly. That's fairly typical seer gibberish.
The words are not mine, gentle Belden,
she told him.
These are the names as they are written in the stars, and in the prophecies. The incidental and worldly names which were given them at the time of their births are of no moment in the timeless realm of the two necessities which contend with each other at the center of all that is or ever will be. Each of these companions hath a certain task, and all tasks must be completed ere the meeting which is to come. Else the prophecy, which has guided thy steps since time began, will fail.
And what is my task, Tiradus?
Polgara asked her coolly.
It is as it hath ever been, holy Polgara. Thou must guide and nurture and protect, for thou art the mother, even as ancient Belgarath is the father.
The faintest of smiles touched the blindfolded girl's lips.
Others will aid thee in thy quest from time to time, Belgarian, but those I have named must be with thee at that final meeting.
What about us? Barak demanded. Hetar and Mandoralan and Leldoran and me.
The tasks of each of you are complete, most dreadful bear, and the responsibility for them has descended to your sons. Shouldst thou or the bowman or the horse lord or the knight protector seek to join with Belgarion in this quest, thy presence will cause him to fail.
Ridiculous, the big man sputtered. I am certainly not staying behind.
That choice is not thine to make.
She turned back to Geryon, laying her hand on the massive arm of her mute protector.
This is Toth,
she said.
slumping as if a great weariness were about to overcome her.
"He hath guided my faltering steps since the day that other sight came upon me, and I bound up mine eyes that I might better see. Though it doth rend my soul, he and I must now part for a little while. I have instructed him to aid thee in thy search. In the stars he is called the Silent Man, and it is his destiny to be one of thy companions."
She began to tremble now, as if in exhaustion.
"One last word for thee, Belgarion,"
she said in a quavering voice.
"Thy quest will be fraught with great peril, and one of thy companions shall lose his life in the course of it. Prepare thine heart, therefore, for when this mischance occurs, thou must not falter, but must press on to the completion of the task which hath been laid upon thee."
"Who? Which one of them is going to die?"
"That hath not been revealed to me,"
she said. And then with an obvious effort, she straightened.
"Remember me, for we shall meet anon."
With that, she vanished. "Where did she go?" General Brendig exclaimed.
"She was never really here,"
Erend replied.
"It was a projection, Brendig," Belgareth said. "But the man, Toth, is solid. Now, how did they work that? Do you know, Erend?"
Erend shrugged.
"I can't tell, Belgareth. But it took the combined power of all of the seers at Kel."
"What absolute nonsense!"
Beric burst out angrily, pounding one huge fist on the table.
"Nothing in this world could make me stay behind."
Mandor Allen, Hetar, and Laldaran vehemently nodded their agreement. Geryon looked at Polgara.
"Could she possibly have been lying?" "Zaratis? No. Aseris is not capable of lying. She may have concealed a few things, but she could never have lied. What she told us was what she saw in the stars."
"How can she see the stars with that blindfold over her eyes?"
Laldaran objected. Polgara spread her hands.
"I don't know. The seers perceive things in ways we don't entirely understand."
"Maybe she read them wrong," Hetar suggested.
"The seers at Kel are usually right," Belden growled. "So I wouldn't necessarily want to bet my life on that."
"Well, that brings us right to the point," Geryon said. "I am going to have to go alone."
"Alone?"
Zenedra gasped.
"You heard what she said. Somebody who goes with me is going to get killed."
"What has ever been a possibility, Geryon?"
Mandor Allen said soberly.
"But never a certainty."
"I won't let you go by yourself," Beric declared.
Geryon felt a peculiar wrench, almost as if he had been rudely pushed aside. He was powerless as a voice which was not his came from his lips.
"Will you people stop all this babbling?" it demanded. "You've been given your instructions, now follow them."
They all stared at Geryon in amazement. He spread his hands helplessly, trying to let them know that he had no control over the words that were coming from his mouth.
Belgareth blinked. "This must be important, if it can make you take a hand directly," he said to the awareness that had suddenly usurped Geryon's voice.
"You don't have time to sit around debating the issue, Belgareth. You have a very long way to go, and only so much time."
"Then what Saratus said was true?"
Polgara asked.
"As far as it went. She's still not taking sides, though."
"Then why did she come at all?"
"She has her own task, and this was part of that. She must also give instructions to Zandramas."
"I don't suppose you could give us a hint or two about this place that we are supposed to find?"
"Belgareth, don't do that. You know better. You have to stop at Prolgu on your way south."
"Prolgu?"
"Something that has to occur is going to happen there. Time is running out on you, Belgareth, so stop wasting it."
"You keep talking about time. Could you be a bit more specific?"
"He's gone, Grandfather,"
Geryon said, regaining control of his own voice.
"He always does that," Belgarath complained. "Just when the conversation gets interesting, he leaves."
"You know why he does it, Belgarath?"
Belgarath sighed and turned toward Belden.
"Yes, I suppose I do." He turned to the others. "Well, that's it, then. I guess we do exactly what Ceratus told us to do."
"You're surely not going to take Zenedra with you?"
Porin objected.
"Of course I am going, Porin,"
Zenedra declared with a little toss of her head.
"I would have gone anyway, no matter what that blind girl said."
"But she said that one of Geryon's companions would die."
"I am not his companion, Porin. I am his wife."
There were actual tears in Beric's eyes now.
"Isn't there anything that I can say to persuade you to change your mind?" he pleaded.
Geryon felt the tears also welling up in his own eyes. Beric had always been one of the solid rocks in his life, and the thought of beginning this search without the big red-bearded man at his side left a great emptiness inside him.
"I'm afraid we don't have any choice, Beric. If it were up to me..."
He left it hanging, unable to go on.
"This hath rent mine heart, dearest Zenedra," Mandarallan said, kneeling before the queen. "I am thy true knight, thy champion and protector, and yet I am forbidden to accompany thee on this perilous quest."
Great glistening tears suddenly streamed down Zenedra's cheeks. She put her arms about the great knight's neck.
Dear Mandarallan,"
she said, kissing his cheek. "I've got some people working on a few things in Meloria," Silk said to Yarblick. "I'll give you a letter to them, so that they can keep you advised. Don't make any hasty decisions, but don't pass up any opportunities either."
"I know how to run the business, Silk," Yarblick retorted. "At least as well as you do."
"Oh, of course you do, but you get excited. All I am saying is that you should try to keep your head." The little man looked down rather sadly at his velvet doublet and all of the jewels he was wearing. He sighed then. "Oh, well, I've lived without all of this before, I suppose." He turned to Durnik. "I guess we should start packing." Geryon looked at him in perplexity. "Weren't you listening, Geryon?" the little man asked him. "Ceratus told you whom you were supposed to take along. Durnik, the man with two lives. Erend is the bearer of the orb, and in case you have forgotten, I am the guide." Geryon's eyes widened. "Naturally, I am going with you," Silk said with an impudent grin. "You'd probably get lost if I were not along to show you the way." And this concludes Guardians of the West, Book 1 of The Melorian, by David Eddings. David Eddings published his first novel, High Hunt, in 1973, before turning to the field of fantasy with The Belgariad, the series available now from Books in Motion. He followed that with The Melorian, now in production. Born in Spokane, Washington in 1931, and raised in the Puget Sound area north of Seattle, he received his Bachelor of Arts degree from Reed College in Portland, Oregon in 1954, and a Master of Arts degree from the University of Washington in 1961. He has served in the United States Army, has worked as a buyer for the Boeing Company, and has been a grocery clerk and a college English teacher. He now lives with Lee, his wife, and collaborator, in the state of Nevada. This story is a work of fantasy fiction. The names, characters, and events in the story written by David Eddings are all fictional. Any similarity to actual events, persons, or places is entirely coincidental. For Books in Motion, this is Cameron Byerly, thanking you for listening.